Okay, let's bring this meeting to order. The March 4th, 2014 Conservation Commission, Newburyport Conservation Commission in council chambers. First item on the agenda are approval of the meeting minutes from February 18th.
Did you need to postpone those till the next meeting? Because I wasn't at that meeting.
Okay, so we don't have a...
Yeah.
All right, so we don't, we will table those till the next meeting and move on. First item is the CZM Coastal Resiliency Grant Update.
Okay, I just wanted to give you all a brief update on a grant application that we just submitted on Friday for a brand new CZM grant called their Coastal Resiliency Grant. And it's, you can apply for up to $200,000 for a variety of approaches to municipal planning and implementation of projects for coastal resiliency, basically sea level rise and climate change. And so we applied for $200,000 to do a coastal resiliency master plan, which would involve a risk assessment and vulnerability analysis for the entire city, with a primary focus on some of our more critical infrastructure and downtown resources. The treatment plant, the water treatment plant, the central waterfront, Plum Island, things like that. So it will also include then, after the risk assessment and vulnerability analysis, there'll be policy recommendations and recommendations for projects for implementation that would help the city's resiliency in light of any sea level rise. So that was submitted on Friday. We'll find out about it in April, and we think we have a really good shot.
How much money do they have?
They have $1 million. They have $1 million, but I think because it's a brand new grant that not a whole lot of people were aware of it necessarily, so that maybe we'll also, they said they got several applications at the meeting, at the MACC meeting on Saturday. I went to the climate change and sea level rise seminar, and the grant administrator was there on the panel, and she mentioned the grant, but it didn't sound like they got an overwhelming number of applications. So we have our fingers crossed, and I think we're also in good shape because we have all our ducks in a row in terms of other planning processes that are going on in the city right now, with the master plan and the zoning rewrite happening kind of concurrently. So that this could feed some recommendations into those two processes as well. So that's very cool. Then,
Good evening, everyone. Is there a match with that grant?
There's a local match that has to be provided, 25%. So we've put that together with the help of Peter and John Eric and the folks at Arcadis. We put that together through...
That's right. That was the sewer water, the problem with the support letter and the commission.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So Mayor Holliday has been in support of this and helping us through her Director of Policy and Administration, Peter Lombardi, to get it all put together. The in-kind services will be provided through a combination of city staff hours and some funding actually through water and sewer. We'll see. Keeping our fingers crossed. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Anything else on the agenda today?
Couple of small things. I wanted to let the commissioners know that we have another request from, what was his name? John?
Forgetting his name.
He does the Peapod demonstration out at the Frog Pond. He wants to do another Peapod pilot demonstration project. Higgins! You began with an H, thanks. Yeah, he's going to do another one out there.
Can I just say something about that? My personal feeling is if somebody has an innovative high technique that they want to pilot, then they should pilot. We'd be happy to let them pilot his project, but you're asking us, his original grant request was $67,000 for a technique that we don't know if it's going to work.
Right. This
and the chances of anything being able to clean the Frog Pond from everything that I've been reading is only way to clean it is to drain it and then spend millions of dollars taking out the lead, the arsenic, all the other stuff in there,
yeah,
and seal it and make it like a fountain.
Right. He's a real scientist, and he really believes in his technique. And I think this time, he's proposing to do it for no cost.
Well, good.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Exactly.
But it still only addresses what he's interested in.
It's removing the phosphorus from the water column. It's with his method. So I said that I would bring it to the commission's attention and see if you would all agree to allow another pilot demonstration project of his Peapod out there this spring.
Why not?
Right, why not? For free.
Yeah, for free. Yeah. All it is doesn't do anything except you have this contraption that you sit in the thing. And
I think part of it is supplying him with the necessary data that he needs to continue to improve and you know, develop his product. So.
Well, we certainly can take data and give him that information from whatever water samples or whatever. We can certainly help him that way, but not to the tune of $67,000.
No. Right.
Not at all.
We could put that somewhere else.
Anything else?
And we have 251 Low Street, which is the farm stand across from the Shaw's Port Plaza area. The cornfield back there, they have come forward with an ANRAD that we opened the hearing on at the last meeting, and we're requesting a peer review of the wetland delineation for that site. We got a proposal for that peer review from Mark Jacobs, and I forwarded it to the commissioners. So we just need to approve that, and they can move forward in the spring with that peer review, and then I guess some future development.
Is there anything outstanding with my favorite topic with you? Probably.
The landfill? No. I mean, I shouldn't say no, there's nothing outstanding. I'm sure there are things outstanding, but we don't, the Conservation Commission doesn't have, it's part of the superseding order conditions, the vernal pool restoration work. They completed the wetland restoration work, and that looked good last year in the spring, but I'm not sure how that's going to look again this year. So we'll have to go out and do some monitoring.
We're not there. We're still not. They have an auto dialer on the flare, and they are, at probably 95%. They brought in the original designer on the flare, and they're still trying to rebuild it. And I've asked if they would put a crown on the top because apparently the flare has singed red hawk wings. The birds are concerned about that.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is put for $1,500 a certain crown on top of the whole flare system that prevents the birds from lighting on it.
Oh, so they're going to do that? We'll see.
We're just talking Billy Tebow.
Right.
Nothing is easy with him.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is where we're in year 12 of closing the landfill.
Right.
But anyway, we're close, but we're not there.
Okay.
So I just thought I'd
give you that. Thank you. And actually, since you're here and giving us updates, have you heard any latest information on where the jetty project is in terms of the South Jetty and when they're going to be done?
They have to be done by the end of March.
Right, but are they on track to have?
I think they're behind because of the weather, and I'm hoping that they can do plumber patrols if they need to extend their time so that we don't have to get into shutting this project down.
Right.
Because from my understanding, there were no nests out there this year in that section.
Okay.
A couple years back, just before we did the jetty project, we had nests by that south jetty, but we don't. And then hopefully they'll start redesigning because we did get, thank you, John Tierney, the $10 million for the north jetty. So this is all really, really good for both Salisbury and Newbury and Newburyport. So.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's great news.
So,
okay,
and,
good. So that's it.
If I can add on that, I've heard informally from somebody that has close contact with the Corps that they had reached the end of the jetty. They were running out of the big rock in Seabrook, and they were making some changes to use a larger quantity of small rock and have it spread wider.
Thank you.
Hmm.
But, I haven't heard that.
But I don't know if it's hearsay, so I'm not sure that's 100% accurate, but
Probably
sounds right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I'm sure, you know, if it goes past March 31st, the endangered agencies, the state and the feds, are actually among the most reasonable. They never really stop.
Excuse me?
No, they really are.
No, they're not.
Wait, who, Army Corps? Right.
Who are you working for?
Well, no, I mean, you can work things out with a monitor with enough pressure with them. They're never...
See, that's the operative word, with enough pressure.
You still need pressure, but I'm saying among the most reasonable. If EPA or the Army Corps had a deadline they didn't want you going past, they're pretty inflexible. If the endangered species, there's ways around it. So, I mean,
Yeah.
It's relative. It's flexibility is relative.
Well, as I said, if they put a color monitor, they came in under budget, so I would assume that we should be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, especially since there isn't an issue out there. So.
But the interesting part of that, the reason I was curious about all these changes and running out of rock and seabrook, is now the $10 million budget for Salisbury is ever really going to be enough, and they bring rock from somewhere else.
So that could be rock from somewhere. Yeah. We were fortunate that you know, Harley showed up at one of our Merrimack Valley Beach Alliance meetings and said, hey, guess what? You know, the tunnels they blew out of the new plant? I got all this rock.
Right.
And before I, you know, drill it all up and put it into small pieces, does anybody want it?
Yeah.
I mean, we're very fortunate. If we're out, they have to find rock elsewhere. That's part of the contract.
Right. No, I know.
It just adds
to the cost, so the $10 million means they may be looking at the first phase of the two-phase project.
Well, that's fine. Once they've invested $10 million, my guess is they're not going to stop there. If it needs to go a little beyond that, there.
We have just a couple more million to finish it. Yeah. And then the dredging.
Right.
And then changing the channel.
And then the Piscataqua River.
Right. Right.
And this is if it actually stops the erosion on that.
Yeah, it will be.
It's been interesting to see the changing sand conditions on the Newburyport Beach as a result of the South Jetty being repaired.
Well, yeah, it's just piling up there.
It's piling up.
It's getting torn out from Newbury because of the groins.
Yeah, that's not for the same reason.
The 70s that the Corps wrote on the Newburyport section?
No.
Really fascinating. There's a rivet, and there's apparently, I believe the report says, about 3,000 feet of spot installed revetments that were put in by the state in the 70s.
Out by the jetty? By the South Jetty?
No, north of Groin 2 in Newburyport. So underneath your dune system out there?
Really?
Apparently there's some pictures of it. I can.
Well,
really? Interesting.
You look at the old pictures of, or you see how far the jetty goes in.
Right.
Yeah,
in reality,
right.
Which used to be all water.
So that makes sense.
I'll try to get that stuff in a PDF over to you. It's fascinating pictures. It's just really
amazing. I'd love to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for all your work. Appreciate it. Have a good night.
You too.
You couldn't do the minutes from the last meeting, but you could do them from the previous meeting. They were tabled last month.
Oh, they were.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, but you have.
Yes, right.
You have enough to write people on there.
Right.
Okay. Do we want to
approve?
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Oops, I'm not allowed to say it.
Yeah, exactly.
What am I thinking?
All right. And if I know Dan wasn't here, if you didn't hear me, there have been a few emails going around. Larry Junta, my counselor, saw that, was it 24, what's the High Street, 249, whatever the,
yeah.
James Van Bockelen, Larry got really interested in that and he sent something to Charlie Tontar and Jared Eigerman about it, and I sent them a little more information, and Jared Eigerman apparently knows him, he's, you know, the land use lawyer and all that, so he's offered to help them get that set up too, so.
It would be good to find out if the property next door actually has some written restriction on their land also.
Well, it shouldn't be too hard to find out.
Yeah.
As part of the planning board approval, I think.
Right, because there's quite a bit of property back there that's not developed.
Combine the two somehow, or at least make it be known that they're both involved.
Right.
All
other items under old and new business. Does anyone else have any questions about anything or updates?
What about the peer review?
That's right. Did you all get a chance to look at that?
Yeah, the only question I had about it was the timing of the payment. Assume the applicant is going to pay for this?
Yeah, so how it works, the applicant pays for it. So the applicant gives us the chunk of money, the estimated cost, which in here is $1,100, I believe. And we put it in a special account, and then we pay Mark Jacobs out of that account.
Because there's a whole lot in Jacob's proposal about interest if you don't pay within a certain time. And I wouldn't want us to get between Jacobs and an applicant that's supposed to pay us. But if he's going to deposit it in advance, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'll be fine.
I think that's generally how we do it, is it gets put in an account and we draw from it as needed. What's all going to get done?
Mark Jacobs going out there.
No.
No, he's not going to go out there until it's totally clear.
Right, well, we continued the hearing until the next meeting.
We did because they wanted, they thought that it would be all set by mid-March. But the way this March is looking so far, nothing's going to be.
What does our reg say? Is it April?
It says we do not have to look at it until April unless you decide otherwise. It's at your discretion to make that determination.
So whatever the ground clause, which doesn't look like it's going to be anytime soon.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's got to be.
They know that's in our ordinance, so they're prepared for us to have them hold off.
Okay. All right. So let's move on.
Have we approved the peer review proposal or not?
Are we going to do that now?
Well, why not?
Okay. Well,
I'll make a motion to approve this peer review.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay. Okay. Now on to... a request for minor modification, Scott Cameron and the Warren Cameron Group.
Yeah. I'm going to represent them, sort of, because I talked to Scott Cameron today and he can't make it. He had a conflict with another meeting tonight and felt that when he was here in our January meeting and we discussed it all and he explained the situation with the plantings in the rear of the property and letting it go back to a sort of a natural environment, that this minor modification could be done without him here. I thought that was fine, and that if you had significant questions, he said it would be fine to continue it until the next meeting when he'll be here for the certificate of compliance anyway. But basically, as it states in his letter, they're abandoning the mowing in the rear portion of the property and in order to just let the natural shrubs and native vegetation come back on its own, which they believe will be stronger and healthier than trying to plant a bunch of things that may or may not take. And in return for that change, the commission asked them at the last meeting in January to provide additional trees. And so what he proposes, two additional red maples and an additional red pine. So that's the change, really. It's just a minor modification to the planting plan. But.
It's going to be in for a certificate of compliance.
They're coming in for a certificate of compliance.
Before they plant the trees.
The trees, I believe, were planted. No?
Some of them have been.
But maybe it's okay. So maybe we can continue the certificate from compliance until we feel comfortable with those. Right. Right.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Next is, next is sign the paper.
Yeah, I'll just let him know maybe they need to postpone the certificate of compliance until we can make sure that those are established.
That's their big rush for some reason.
I don't know why they'd be in a big rush for it. But
They can apply for it, we just give them a partial, because,
right.
Sometimes legally they just need to have that tidied up.
Yeah, okay.
One thing I was thinking about with situations like that where they don't want a lot of leaves is red cedars are pretty good too. I've got a couple red cedars that are wet feet all the time and they do great. They look great, so I don't drop too many needles. And for future purposes. All right, next item, Tom Hughes, Hughes Environmental, 8 Martha Street, request for a certificate.
Before we start, I was able to open the court, and there's a picture of the rebar being installed in 66. I was off on a year.
Oh, a little lot of rock out there.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Right, no, I mean, what the caption says exactly is, Photo 5, Plum Island, in 1966, problem area extended along about 3,000-foot sector extending north of groin number two. State constructed a section of revetment here and at other sporadic locations to the north.
So is that buried under the huge dune along Reservation Terrace?
That's the picture. Oh.
So where is groin two?
Well, groin two is buried, I believe.
Okay.
Eeks.
I saw a photo recently.
What's that building?
From
is
65,
that the Coast Guard building at the point?
And there's a bunch of groins between the beach center and the jetty.
That's like
and
where the restaurant is there at the center.
But he said it's Newbury.
And the erosion was horrible. I mean, I had actually wondered if they had taken out the groins.
This is Newburyport?
Stabilize it. That's Newburyport.
Do you think that's the Coast Guard station at the point?
Yeah, that is the Coast Guard station in the
oh
far
my gosh.
In the distance.
No way.
Yeah.
So that's how far the water came.
Well, the Coast Guard station used to be right out where the jetty leaves.
Right, because the jetty goes all the way back there.
Right.
But so just basically, that's all that dune is nuisance.
Right, but after this, they just stabilized the beach. This is why these reports are so fascinating. I actually have all the Army Corps reports now on Plum Island. And to stabilize the beach, they came up with a plan to raise the elevation of the inner portion of the jetty, which would stop the loss of sand into the river. They were the littoral movement. Because the littoral movement of Plum Island, it's north and south, depending on the configuration of the outer bar and depending on the weather pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a lot of calm weather, a ton of sand is going to move north if you have a healthy outer bar. And if you have storm weather coming from different directions, then it reverses littoral drift, and that's a stronger movement of sand. So during storms, you get a ton of sand that moves south. And during calm weather, you get kind of this incremental movement.
Right, which is why it's piling up now.
So it's not as simple as fixing a jetty here and there.
No, it's not. I mean, it's a ton of dumb luck with weather, and we've had the opposite. You know, we've had, especially in Newbury, where we've had weather coming from just the right direction, and the outer bar doesn't extend far enough. I mean, it's what I worry about when people talk about beach mining. You know, you're going to rob it from the intertidal zone, and then the bar is going to be what contributes the sand. So now you're refocusing erosion.
Having said
well, there,
that,
but,
though,
there, but you're
yeah,
saying
the
that
Army
the bar
Corps
is not
never
there.
Seen a project they didn't like. So.
No, that's absolutely true. No, I have a positive.
But if the bar is not there to contribute the sand, it to begin with.
Right. I mean,
then the sand is going to come back also into that zone from the beach itself.
Well, from the beach
and
from further out.
And continue to lower the beach profile.
It's going to make it somewhat deeper. Right. If you're going to monkey with the beach, what I prefer doing is you monitor the configuration of the beach year-round long enough so you have a variable beach profile. So if it's March, you know this is roughly where it belongs. And if you go and you scrape and keep it within that profile, it's no different than just getting a storm we never had. Mm-hmm. And it should be okay. Once you get outside the profile, dynamic equilibrium takes over and it's going to try to reset itself to a profile. And my worry is that you've got people who are just saying, oh, if we just scrape 6 inches, well, it depends. If you just scrape 6 inches, are you taking it outside of this profile or not? Mm-hmm. I could go on with coastal geology, but.
Where is that report done?
In the Army Corps offices in Concord.
Oh.
And it's on my Dropbox.
Oh.
So I'll email that one off. I don't know how many of them are small enough that I can email them, but let me first just kind of remember, let's get to eight Martha. So this is the way eight Martha used to look. There was a full foundation home. There was this really low profile of barn slash shed, if you have a large, and a bunch of lawn, a bunch of dirt, and some areas towards the back with pretty healthy American beach grass. And then the plan was to tear down the house, reconstruct this home, and because it's in zone X, it's technically not in the floodplain, so it just needs to be 2 feet above grade. For your regs and for the building code, it just needs to be on piles at an elevation set by the commission, basically. This is one area where the barn was coming out. A carport was constructed here. Basically, what we proposed was kind of taller shrubby plantings to bookend lower plantings here. What actually got put in was kind of more sort of medium to low plantings along here, and then a more extended planting area that comes out much, much further into that area here. So this area, from what I observed on site, is probably twice the size of this end. And then the deviation that I wrote about in the email is kind of this circular sitting area that's right in here, which actually I think realistically is a good idea, because what that does is that gives you someplace to sit outside that's relatively sheltered and doesn't force people to then go off into the only other area that would be relatively sheltered, which would be this area where there used to be a fire pit, and this kind of area back here, which is where most of the healthy dune grass is. In addition, and I'll show you the pictures taken today, and one that was taken by the realtor. This was taken by the realtor, this clamshell area. It does have a cobble edging to keep it contained. Here's the carport. This is taken from the deck just up near the driveway. So you've got the clamshell area here. You can see in here fresh plantings here. Also fresh plantings here and here. Not all of those were proposed planting areas in the original NOI. So there's been more planting than what was proposed. And I think it more than offsets this circular area here, and especially when we were proposing more than one-to-one in the original planting plan. So I think from the planting point of view, this little clamshell area is more than offset with the plantings that went in. And it actually provides a benefit in terms of an area to just kind of contain the human disturbance. With regards to 2 foot clearance, I went around, leaned this up as best I could. And from what I could tell, we basically had 2 feet everywhere. In some places, like here, there's kind of a little bit of a hump around the pile, so the thing is lifted up a little bit. I was trying my best to get it so it could stand up, but I do think we pretty much effectively have the 2 foot. I checked on the corners of the structure. Again, plantings and everything look pretty good. It is tough to tell, you know, how healthy things are this time of year, but I checked a couple, and as long as there was a bend and not a break, you know, you're in good shape. There was one plant that is actually kind of right down here where half of the root ball is kind of exposed because sand appears to have kind of blown out from around it. And that would be fixed as soon as the purchase and sale includes a guarantee on all the plants for a year. So we requested a full. I talked to Julie about whether we should request a full or a partial. You know, we prefer to get a full. I think in this case, the buyer is not going to want the plants to die. So I think the private market is going to take care of it. But if you're not comfortable with that, then we at least ask for a partial and then have the planting survival be the only remaining issue.
So will they be able to close on a transaction with a partial?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the biggest issue is getting the occupancy permit.
They would close without any of this if we would let them. You know, I mean, as long as we would sign the occupancy permit.
Right.
Yeah, so they came in, and this is just part of our new policy towards certificates of compliance, which is that when someone comes in for a certificate of occupancy, sign off, or I ask if they have their certificate of compliance yet. And if they don't, then my feeling is that I'd like to see them apply for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because what will happen is, you know, 90% of the time is that the house gets sold, the builder walks away, the previous owner walks away, the order of conditions is forgot about forever, and the new owner doesn't even know that they need to get a certificate of compliance until 10 years later when they sell the house and some lawyer goes into a panic. So
they usually, I mean, they know about it at the closing, but think about when you closed on the house.
They're saying, oh, it was just built, this is still...
No, it's like a pile this thick of like, sign this, and by the time you're done, you have no clue.
Yeah.
But I also included in this COC request the invoice from Pearson Landscaping up in Bedford, which is an native plant supplier, of the, you know, exact quantity and size and everything of plants that were delivered to the site. And that appears to correspond with what I see.
Well, I think I'd just prefer to go with the partial.
That's been our
Yeah, I'll say it's what we've always done. And I guess the one they need.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, as long as it's clear that all that's remaining is the survival of the plants, then we don't have to go through,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. all the engineering survey stuff. And we can just kind of take some photos.
Yeah, and that's fine. We do a partial, making a note that the plantings. Need to be confirmation of the planting's survival needs to be confirmed before a complete certificate, and then, you know, they can.
Now they were put in July. So one question is, I assume you want two growing seasons, and do you consider July planting? Do you consider last year a growing season? It's kind of it's in the middle. You know, if it was in June, early June, I would make a good argument with you that I think it absolutely should be, but I think. It's in the middle, and I think it can be.
Maybe somebody can take a look at the end of the summer.
Yeah, no, I'll take a look at the end of the summer and everything.
I think they should plan on coming back after another year, another growing season, and then, you know, we can take a look at it and see.
Right. No, so I guess what I'm getting at is because everything is guaranteed within a year with the builder, it would kind of make sense to evaluate it in September or October.
Mm-hmm.
That when their guarantee period expires?
No, but if they're closing in March, it means that the guarantee period would expire next March. And we're going to have probably similar conditions to what we have right now.
Well, it's to their benefit then to come to us and ask us what we think at that point. So that if they need to ask for replacement plantings, it's still part of that guarantee for them. Then that's fine. That's what they should do.
Right.
But, I mean,
I guess I'm just trying to figure out, would you be willing to consider a full certificate after it's been through the full summer of growing, or do you want to see it go another year? You know?
Well, you said that the warranty would start when they buy it in March?
It's a year warranty on everything, and I asked them to add in the plants to what they do. When you buy a house from a builder fresh, generally there's a 1-year guarantee on everything, your faucets, your electric,
right.
et cetera. they've added in at my request the plants too.
Which unfortunately can't totally evaluate either now or maybe next March.
Well,
so
but they can take a look at the plants in the fall and
right.
they're all there.
Exactly.
And they can determine whether they need to go back.
Right, no, I would guess
September, yeah. October.
If I just bought a brand new house and if a plant is dead in July, I'm calling the builder. I'm gonna
yeah.
not be Right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what I would suggest is if I can come back, if everything looks, you know, 100% healthy, there's no question marks at the end of the summer, then...
And we're not talking about trees. We're not talking about things that might take longer to...
Right, there are three pine,
oh.
native pine that we're putting. I think three. It's on the list, but...
If they survive this winter, they'll probably be okay.
Right.
Right, no, seriously. But... Did we specify two growing seasons?
Is that
it's just standard.
Yeah, I don't think we specified, actually. Definitely not in the condition related to the certificate of compliance.
I mean, when you think about out on the island, two growing seasons, for American beach grass, that may make sense, especially in a place like a towards the ocean where it's really critical. But if a plant is going to die in the scorching hot sun, it's going to happen pretty fast. So if it makes it through even one growing season.
But Tom, isn't it apples and oranges? I mean, they need to go to the builder next fall.
Yeah.
At the latest, if they've got a problem. They don't want to wait till a year.
No,
from
no,
now.
No, absolutely. The
but,
thing is, I'm working for
but
the builder.
But whether we insist on two growing seasons or not is unrelated to that.
No, it's not. It's just a matter of what I convey back to the builder, you know, when we're all done, that they're going to get their full one in a year or in 2 years. I think what I'm going to suggest to them is that we evaluate it next fall, and if everything looks 100% healthy, we
yeah.
can go for the fall.
That's,
and if not,
yeah.
then we'll have to replace some plants and wait another year.
That's what I was
but
thinking.
But say some of them were bad this say,
right.
July, and,
yeah.
others,
then you wait
and they had a replant, then they wouldn't even have one growing season.
Right, in which case it wouldn't make sense to go in the fall. And, you know, I'll just basically have to track what they do.
Wouldn't it be easier if we just made it, you know, next spring, they can come in and apply for the final.
Well, two full growing seasons would be July of 2015, right?
Well, a growing season is generally May, early May or late April to, like, end of September, October 15th, probably. That's a full growing season, so.
Well, are you concerned about adding two growing seasons to the replantings, if there are replantings, is that?
You know, that never comes up.
No, you guys
have signed off on
yeah.
stuff when people have done plantings right before they came in to replace dead ones, which
I would think
at some point you just kind of have to.
I would think if they planted them in July and they made it through the summer, that's one growing season.
Right.
You know.
So let's just look at the fall, and if there's problems,
we can
yeah. move from there.
Okay. No, that's it. I'm just looking for some clarity to bring back.
Yeah.
I mean, your concern really is that if we don't issue a certificate of compliance in the fall because we're holding for another complete growing season, the warranties expire on the plants. And if plants don't survive, then the new buyer, the new homeowner,
well,
is going to take on the responsibility.
Not
really. I mean, there's part of that. I mean, I would kind of like to see the builder forced to, you know, say the homeowner doesn't pay attention and this is dead plants, I'd like the builder to have to replace them and not the homeowner.
But you could do that
but,
irrespective of what
right.
we do with our
No, this isn't our issue. All I'm looking
yeah.
for, what I'm really concerned about is just some level of certainty on what I tell that my client is the builder on when to come back.
Two growing seasons
right.
is after
if,
next.
If, right, so if we consider, you know, we come in September, October as being two growing seasons, then I think that's what we do, and if, you know, if it ended up going further out just because the warranty expired, I mean, the person who owns the home is the one who's ultimately responsible for the plants. The whether the builder's warrantied or not is a contractual issue between the
right.
homeowner. So that's more irrelevant. It's more just making sure that I know what to tell the builder and when he can expect to get the final sign off. And if you guys said 7 years, I'd just go back and say 7 years. There's a point at which it's not really something I care deeply about. It's just more an issue of just what makes the most sense.
Motion to issue a partial certificate of compliance.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
So are all these reports retrievable easily in Concord? I mean, you can.
Yeah, I mean, you have to file a FOIA with the Corps if you want to get them that way. I got them for a client, but some of them are online. And what I'm going to try to do is see if I can either share them. Like, Julia, do you do Dropbox?
Do I do Dropbox?
Do you do?
I don't do Dropbox. I've never done Dropbox, but I'm sure it's something I could do.
Okay, super easy. What I can do, I can actually send you an invite to Dropbox, which gives you an extra. Dropbox, like, I won't pay for it, but they give you a free.
It's an external site. It's
like a cloud folder system.
Yeah.
And if I send you an invite and you set up through that, you get an extra 500 megabytes free. And I get an extra 500 megabytes for referring you to Dropbox. Oh. And then I can share a folder with you that has all the documents in it.
Okay. Will you send me an email or a link or something that
yep,
I need
I
to
will.
Use? Yeah. Okay.
And then you could then send it out to the commission, and if any of them are not members, you could do the same thing I do with you and get your extra 500 megabytes and like.
Is there a fee for joining?
No, it's free.
Oh, it's free.
But if you want 100 gigabytes of space, then you start paying, which I can do.
Gotcha. Okay, no good. I was going to ask maybe the commission needs to vote on paying for us to have Dropbox.
It'd be great to have these reports.
Yeah,
they're a fun read.
Send me the link too, and I'll give you 500 meg.
All right.
No, I definitely want to see these reports.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying reading them. I'm through like number 8, and I think I just need to go up to New Hampshire and buy some more of this really good single malt scotch that I brought back from Scotland. Because to get the rest, I mean, it's fun reading, but.
you have a different definition.
And an Army Corps report.
And
perfect. Just what you want.
Meg's goes down.
All right, take care.
Good night.
Okay.
That brings up one more question I had. About
table that motion.
Just quickly, we have about $23,000 in our Conservation Commission account. And so I was thinking that it would be great for us to have two things. For me in the office, for our office to have two things. One is a laptop that I can use when I'm not at work, when we have days, snow days, whatever, that I can do work on and bring out to sites with me and do things like look up properties. The other would be, or like even a tablet, but a laptop would be better. And a color printer so that we can print some of these images that we're getting from both applicants and just downloading in color.
There's no color printer in there?
We don't have a color printer in the planning office, no.
Hmm. Other than that monstrosity in Andy's
office.
Wow.
And that's not even.
How prehistoric.
Yeah, that needs to go on Craigslist.
Can you still buy it?
That thing, I'm getting rid of that. So we don't have single color printer.
I have one.
The mayor has a color printer, but that's it, and we're not hooked up.
I mean, if you're not printing a lot, you can buy a pretty decent machine for $100.
Yeah. I've got a brother duplexing color laser that, particularly if you're not printing a lot, the thing does a great job. You can double side print.
Yeah.
And I think I got it about 3 years ago for about $300.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I mean, HP. Mm. And that was like $99.
Yeah. And because we have a great printer in the office
that I
use for everything, and we all share it.
But
just for the occasional need to print something in color.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just, it doesn't even,
just don't
not even
it,
worth the trouble to print something in
just
black
don't let
white.
It get networked to everything in the building or everything.
Well, yeah.
No, right. No, it would just be networked to my computer.
I can look into
some different costs or things or Joe's.
Yeah, you know, even the $99 ones are on color are very
right,
good.
Right.
Yeah.
I would definitely go particularly if you're not printing a lot. A laser, color laser.
Yeah, I've got an HP laser that I really like.
There's a Brothers one at Staples for $200.
$200 to $300 is a pretty typical range for color laser printers.
So $1,000 for the two, you know, printer and a laptop.
Yeah. I don't know if you'd rather a tablet.
I haven't even talked to Andy about this. About, not that it matters, it's you guys who have to make a decision on the budget, but I actually have just been thinking about it in a vague sort of sense and wishing that I had a laptop and a color printer. But so, you know, you can think about it more, we can look into it
more.
Well,
just get something that you, that's portable enough.
Exactly.
That you, you know, if you're going to be taking it around.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Right. And like the tablet I have, I have an external keyboard for it, too.
See, that's,
so you can just...
That's the only reason why I would want a laptop, is for the keyboard to be able to actually do some work on it. But if,
oh, you,
if
can,
you can get an external keyboard,
sure.
Oh yeah, the
tablet.
It's really a monitor issue at that point.
Right.
What kind of
yeah.
a monitor?
Yeah,
right.
Size,
being able to pull
you
documents
feel
and
better
stuff
looking
up.
At.
Do you
yeah.
have any need of a scanner? Because if you get,
no.
you know, one of these all-in-one things. It's a
yeah,
good
that's
scanner.
True. We've got it. We've got
is
a scanner
a
in the office. Yeah, we've got a good scanner. It's a scanner, copier, printer, the whole thing. And it works
my
$500 well.
Machine does that.
Yeah.
It scans, it prints, it copies.
Yeah. But
although
a,
that doesn't scan anything in color.
But these are inkjet printers, right?
Mine's inkjet.
Yeah, I would not go with an inkjet. I think that's
yeah,
a,
I have one at home, but an inkjet.
Spend a fortune on
sort of
ink.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Spend a fortune on ink. No,
ink
when,
runs out.
When you replace laser cartridges, they're a lot of money. But if you're not printing a lot,
they last forever.
They last forever. They don't dry up because they're dry already.
Well,
you know.
I mean, just brings up the issue of if you get a printer, who's responsible for the toner or the ink or whatever? Would it be us or the planning house?
I don't know.
Well, we can cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah.
I would guess that if we networked the rest of the planning office to it, then they would pay for the toner or whatever, the ink, out of their budget, out
mm-hmm.
of the general budget.
And that way, if it's color, you want to avoid networking it if at all possible, because you may want a more robust one if it's
well, you know, that's why I'm saying maybe I just wanted to bring it up for discussion, and maybe I need to talk with Andy about getting one for the whole office, and maybe we can use part of the commission budget, part of the Parks Department budget now
mm-hmm.
that Lisa's
yeah.
full time. Maybe we can figure out a way to, because I'm sure she could use a color printer as well. Doesn't make sense to have two in the office when we only need one. But
well, I think it's all a good idea.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Don't you
okay.
yeah.
look into it a little bit
I'll
more and decide what you.
Yeah, and find the right machine, like the tablets.
Right.
A lot of them, they have that the new Windows 8, and there's a lot of mixed reviews on that. I don't. It may not
okay.
operate.
Okay.
I've got Windows 8, and I'm not overly happy.
Really?
On your tablet or your machine?
It's an all-in-one thing.
I have a tablet with Windows 8. It's
it's okay.
I don't have an
it,
issue
it
with it.
It just takes a lot of getting used to.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. I mean,
they're always
changing. I've kind of read
some
reviews and people kind of hate it.
8.1, they changed 8.1.
I did the upgrade to that, and
I never like upgrades.
It's a little.
Upgrades are always bad, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Just are messing with something that's
yeah.
already pretty good.
Yeah. No, I think it's more, you know, you can look at both of them and see how you, in
yeah.
specific, would use. One.
Right.
Because a lot of times the laptops can have a bigger screen, and it might be more.
Yeah, because I'd be trying to pull up documents and plans that people email me when I'm like out on a site and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can zoom in too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
I mean,
easy enough to zoom in.
It's really more about the information than about having some super sort of nice display.
Yeah, I actually use my tablet a lot. This thing takes
and having it be
literally
portable
to start.
would be
yeah.
good too. More portable, better.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
And sometimes, with some of them, I don't know if they have a GPS in them too. There's software. There's like mapping software too that might be able to utilize on it without needing a web connection or anything. It might be something to look up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you go to a site and if you want to see the aerial or something of it.
Yeah.
Or if you want to see what where the parcel is.
And you don't have a connection, right. That's a good point.
There is, you know, it depends, you know, think about what you want to do with it. Because they got lots of stuff like that out there. And, you know, we have some money where we can upgrade your system. And, you know, they had Trimble GPSs in there that are like multi-$1,000, and I found one sitting on the floor and no one was even using it. I'm like looking at this thing.
Where?
I have it.
Where?
It was in the planning
office. In the planning office?
Yes. Big, beautiful Trimble GPS with a screen on it with maps and everything. And
no way.
They weren't using it.
Well, we don't go out on GPS sites. I mean, that's...
No.
Yeah. But that's why I'm surprised we even have one.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
Now, Steve.
The motion is on the floor.
You'll have to recall it from the floor.
Hello.
Motion to adjourn. Second.
All in favor? Aye. Opposed?
Did you guys get an email from the MACC with your access
yes.
information
yes.
to that new document? Okay, great.